Aloha.
Hello and welcome. We are back from theballerlifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is, of course, Brian Beckner. Thank you very much for joining us. Episode number 418 of the show. Appreciate your patronage. I always somehow get, for some reason, get heartburn right as I start the show. I mean, it's chronic. It's the one of the many fat guy burdens that I carry. I've decided to be unfat, so, or to get less fat. I'll never be unfat, but to get less fat. So I went on a run, 3 mile run just before we started. And you know, it's a struggle. Like, I gotta be honest, my old bones cannot take it like they used to. It's like, I think I can go out and run because I used to run. And when I used to run, I mean, I used to run when I was like 37. Now I'm almost 47, and you just can't, it's your body is just not as good anymore, especially when you're not built for the road like me, who is a short, squatty, little wide, stocky, thick legs,
thick dick.
Okay. One of those things is a lie. You get it. So it's work. It's work for me to run. It hurts. But I just did it. If you listen chronologically, if you are what people describe on this show as being hashtag team current, where you listen to this show as it comes out every week. Well, this show is going to drop on Wednesday, April 20th, which is the stoner holiday, national holiday, 420. So I thought as a nod to the listeners, I would light up a joint and get a little stoned before we do the show. This could be a mess because I probably smoke weed in the round like 3 times a year range. Three on the generous side, like 6 times a year. And I'll take a few puffs off a joint, and that's like it. And my beautiful girlfriend Cheyenne makes fun of me because she's like, you don't even inhale, because I just take like little, I do inhale, by the way. I just don't hold it in my lungs forever till I cough. I'm not fucking 16 anymore. I already told you my age a little while ago. I'm 46. So I fucking smoke a joint like a gentleman. So here, I'm gonna light one up with my long barbecue fireplace lighter here.
I do. This is a pro thing that you do, is you light the lighter, put it, oh yeah, it smells good. Put it just a little bit under. You don't actually touch the flame. Do the same thing with the cigar, by the way. If you don't know, you just burn that paper off the end. You don't want to inhale the paper, and then you just get it a little hot on the tip with the flame, and then,
oh yeah.
See? I inhale. This is a sativa pre-roll that I got at the dispensary. Imagine thinking that someday you'd be able to walk into a weed store and buy a pack of joints. Like, we used to talk about this in high school. Like, how cool would that be? You know, those stupid stoner conversations you have. And now it's a reality. You can do it. And, you know, in places that have freedoms, you can go to a store and show identification and buy marijuana.
Cannabis. Here, I'll take another hit.
Don't. I inhale. Okay, my chick told me to text her when I lit it because she wants a couple puffs too. Hold on. It's in the process of sending text. This is not very professional, but it's okay. Come hit it. Double entendre. Okay, one more puff.
Okay, that's a good start.
Keep it in this little, oh my God, this little like ceramic ashtray. that my daughter made at camp. Oh my God. Now I got to take a, did my throat. I didn't see. I was trying to prove that I could take man hits. Also, these joints have been in my humidor for quite a while, so kind of dry. Anyway, back to the show. What was I talking about? Oh, so I went on a run, and now I'm trying to drink less. So I'm upping my weed intake because, let's be honest, you got to take the edge off somehow. Life is fucking hard. Life is a motherfucker, and you gotta drop out a little bit. So that's my new thing. Happy 420, you fucking loser stoners out there. Appreciate you listening. Just light up your own joint. A couple things. Well, first of all, if you're not a Red Circle subscriber, you should be one, because I'm toying with the idea of doing this each and every week. Where I just do, just for subscribers, I maybe come on here and just do like 20 minutes, a free form, just a solo show. And I've probably talked about this before. And you know what? If I have, fuck off. I forgot. Now I remember. So if you're not subscribed to our Red Circle, that's going behind the paywall, baby. You're not getting that for free. You already get as much as I'm going to give you for free. You've maxed out on free my voice. You're all fucking shops closed on free shit. You get plenty of free shit. You get like an hour and a half every week of free shit. Me and Ed talking. You're going to get that this week. Oh, by the way, we're reviewing a movie today. I should have said this at the beginning. Ed is away. He's on vacation, spring break. So we pre-recorded a movie review, a really like important movie to me as a child. And I talk about it. I explain why in the movie review that we do. It's Ed, myself, and our dear friend Caleb, aka at Bird Respector. We discuss the 1985 action classic, Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. They really were going to try to chise that. They were really going to try to Sabalos it and make it a franchise. And you know what? It didn't happen. Apparently, they tried to make a TV movie later with a different, without Fred Ward. How are you gonna have Remo Williams without Fred Ward? Anyway, we discuss it. It's bonkers. Like, anybody that's seen it knows what I'm talking about, and I'll save it. I'm not going to give you that detail. You can hear it when that part of the show starts to play. But anybody that remembers Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, knows why, in light of the current climate that we live in, that even in 1985, the choice that they made in that movie is nuts. And in 1985, no one said anything about it. I looked at the reviews. Nobody mentioned it in the reviews. No one talks about an insane casting choice they made in that movie. But we do talk about it in the movie review that you're going to hear after I stop rambling. So sign up for our Red Circle. Click the link in the show notes. Go there right now. And sign up. It's $50 if you buy the whole year, or it's $5 a month. You want to get a little taste, you know, you want to get a, you want to nibble on the teat of my Red Circle, of my bonus content, and you just pay the $5, cancel whenever, or you're already into me. You saw me across the bar. You know what's up. You're feeling me. You're ready to get balls deep. Go ahead and buy that whole year. It's $50. Click the link in the show notes or go to my Twitter at Brian Beckner. My pinned tweet is a link to sign up to the Red Circle, or you can go to theballerlifestyle.com and click the link at the top of the page. Somebody's back for another hit of the old Jizzoint back there. It's getting a little greedy. A couple things I wanted to get to this week, because we did have the movie recorded, but I was thinking about a couple things that we discussed last week. And if you haven't yet, go back and listen to episode 417, because we talked about a couple things. Oh, and this is what spurred it. I received, did she take my joint? Oh, let's take another hit of it. She came and she relit it quietly. You might have heard the lighter clicking, but she left it lit. Now I'm going to take another hit of it, because this is a stoner show. And it's, look, I know I sound stoned because I am.
Okay, one more hit. Oh, God, no cough. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I just dropped the ash on my taxes. Oh, my God.
Jesus, cleaning lady came today. So we talked about a couple things last week that I wanted to get deeper into, just because I had a little room to flow with it this week, seeing as Ed was gone. And one of the things that we discussed came up this week. So last week we discussed how one time, what do you mean Gmail is temporarily unable to access your, I don't care about that. I'm not sending an email. Last week we discussed how almost presidential assassin John Hinckley, formerly John Hinckley Jr. And I just was kind of glancing at his Wikipedia page. Hold on. I was just looking and it says John Hinckley, American man who attempted to assassinate U.S. president. Parents. Oh, no, never mind. I thought I saw parents and it said Scott Hinckley. That's his brother. I'm like, how's he a junior if his dad's name's Scott? Don't worry about it. At least Ted Kaczynski, his brother turned him in. So it's like, hey, isn't your brother the Unabomber? Yeah, yeah. Guess what? I got the fucking reward. How do you think I got this house? Turning my fucking brother in once I read that manifesto. And by the way, he got MK Ultra'd. Also, by the way, he was right. He shouldn't have blown people up, but he had the right idea and we're all fucked now because of technology, just like he said back then. So whatever. But if your brother's John Hinckley, like, where are you at with that? That's got to be kind of tough because you got the same ass name. You know, people are probably like, oh, that was a long time ago. I remember I was in kindergarten when John Warnock Hinckley Jr. did his thing. Do we know if he was MK Ultra'd? Well, hold on. We'll get back to that. So last week we discussed how he's out, by the way. He went to an institution, I think. And he's been there since I was in, or, you know, a little after kindergarten, because that's when he did his thing. I remember somebody came in the classroom during class, during kindergarten, and said, hey, told the teacher, like whispered something to the teacher. I remember her being in the front of the room, like reading to us. Was it first grade or kindergarten? I went to Montessori, so there's not really like grades there. But I'm pretty sure I was kindergarten age. And then the kindergarten teacher, Miss Colleen, Montessori, you call them by their first names. Miss Colleen, she dropped it on us. Somebody shot the president. Like, does a six-year-old need that info? Or five, whatever I was? I feel like, you know, you save that for mom and dad. Maybe teacher doesn't drop that. Although I don't recall being too affected by it. I think somebody might have cried, but you know, it's little kids cry about everything. So anyway, last week we were talking about how John Hinckley, he's dropped the junior, by the way, his old man must have kicked off. And maybe it just like, you know, it's put some distinction between the one time almost murderer, John Hinckley, and the current indie rocker, singer-songwriter, John Hinckley. So we talked about this last week, how he's relaunched himself since being released from the institution he was in. He's relaunched himself and now he's a recording artist. He's recording. Oh yeah, here it is. He's recording his own music and he's got a bunch of songs out and he's also playing shows and his shows are selling the fuck out. And I was like, hey, we should get John Hinckley, no longer Junior, on the show. Because I'm like, look, I'm a fan. I'm not a fan of trying to kill the president. Okay? Just put that out there. But I'm a fan of his current incarnation because it's great. Like, he makes the same face in the camera and he posts these pictures of him just like looking goofy on Twitter. And I find it amusing. But what I realized is last week when we talked about him, I realized a couple things. I had yet to listen to one of his songs. And I think that's important. So I thought we would experience that together today. But also I mentioned to Ed, hey, well, how about we get him on the show? And then Ed's like, oh yeah, I'll ask him a bunch of Jodie Foster questions. And I'm, you know, look, I'm not completely against that, but I thought we could build up to that. You know, we play it straight at first. Then we get it, you know, we ask the tough questions here. Let's just say that. So, I mean, and I know you people think I'm fucking around because usually I am just bullshitting out of, like, I would have forgotten. But for some reason, the next time that's what it was. Later that week, after the show dropped, John Hinckley's swinging his dick around on Twitter, talking about how he sold out. Here, I'll read you the tweet. We're here. We're talking. Don't worry. We'll get to the other stuff. He goes on Twitter and he's bragging about how all his shows are selling out. He's like, oh yeah. Here's all his songs. He's like, hey, I'm playing the show in Brooklyn. And then he's like, hey, it sold out. So like, you know, maybe I'll add some more shows or whatever, which is great. You know, it's a small venue. He's just starting out. But then I see this tweet. I plan to do some live shows this summer and fall. Just me and my guitar singing songs. Just a quick aside. Tough to hold somebody's attention if it's just you and a guitar. I don't care who the fuck you are. Tough to sit down with your guitar, even if you got the fucking best songs in the world, and play for an hour and a half and keep an audience rapt. Maybe John Hinckley can do it. I would suggest adding some other instrumentation. I would say, you know, maybe do it as a three piece and, you know, you don't have to play loud. You get a drummer that plays those fan thingies. What are those called? 949-464 TBLS. They're not called fan thingies. There's a name for them. It escapes me, but you get a drummer like that with just, you know, a little small kit playing the fan thingies. And then you get a bass player, not acoustic bass, because nobody plays one of those, but you just get a regular ass bass player, just kind of fill out the sound a little bit. And then people got something to look at. It's not just you and your guitar. That's a suggestion. And you know what? I'm going to suggest it because I'll go on here. He continues in his tweet. If you wish to book a show, send email to johnhinckleymanagement@gmail.com. Now it's interesting to me because even I have the ballerlifestyle.com. Do people not care if your professional email is Gmail now? Like I'm not saying like if you're, you know, a freelancer or something, but if you're like trying to be a business, shouldn't he buy johnhinckley.com or almost presidential assassin John Hinckley, or like I'm better now, John, whatever, you know, it's just like Gmail. Anyway, that's his email. If you wish to book a show, send email to johnhinckleymanagement@gmail.com. So me. And I know what you're thinking. Bullshit, because you never do anything, Brian. And you're right. Hold on. My throat's all dry now because this is the high show. The joint kind of dried out the old instrument. So I follow through with that. I cut and paste, motherfucker. I cut and paste that email address into a fucking fresh email. And I say the following. Hi, comma. What am I supposed to? Obviously, he's not reading. I was going to do hi, John. It's kind of annoying when you don't know the person you're writing to. And, you know, it probably wouldn't have been that hard for me to like Google John Hinckley manager, but I didn't think of it till right now. So I just said, hi, comma. Does John do appearances on podcasts? My name is Brian Beckner, and I host the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. Parenthesis. TheBallerLifestyle.com. We would love to be able to interview John and discuss his music career, songwriting process, and what it's like to be playing these big shows. Please let me know if we can book about 20 minutes sometime soon. Thanks. Brian Beckner.
And below that, I put my phone number, which I will not be reading. People have asked guests of the show to give to them my phone number before, which I thought was a little weird. You hit me on the DM. Like, you can get a hold of people without sending a text, right?
Well, I had forgotten that I emailed John Hinckley Jr. Management at gmail.com until I received this. Hi, Brian.
Exclamation point.
I'm Alina. And she's an ampersand for the and. This is a millennial or a Gen Z. I'm Alina. Ampersand. I manage JH. It's
pretty badass.
Unfortunately, comma, we're going to have to pass on this opportunity. Best of luck in all of your endeavors. Alina P. Bracketed John Hinckley Management. So we got Heisman'd by Hinckley. And look, I wouldn't be doing much press either if I were him. I haven't heard him talk, and we have yet to hear him sing. We're about to. Oh, I responded. I forgot. Thanks, Alina. Let me know if he changes his mind.
What was I saying? See, it's the weed. Don't do weed, guys.
Oh, John Hinckley. Yes, I get why he didn't want to come on the show. He doesn't seem, just based on the picture, the one picture of him. It's actually several pictures, and his face, I gotta assume, go to his Twitter, John Hinckley, at John Hinckley on Twitter, because I imagine that his social media people are like coaching him up to have this aloof look on his face, or maybe it's the lithium. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but he's selling out shows. He tried to kill the president. When was that? John Warnock Hinckley, born May 29th, 1955. Who's
a John Hinckley? Oh, you don't live in California. I was going to see who does his Medicare. I could hook him up.
Is an American man who attempted to assassinate U.S. President Ronald Reagan in Washington, D.C. on March 30th, 1981. Kindergarten. 2 months after Reagan's first inauguration. Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that. Barely been the president. Using a .22 caliber revolver, Hinckley wounded Reagan. Police officer Thomas Delahanty and Secret Service agent Tim McCarthy. He critically wounded Press Secretary James Brady, who was disabled in the shooting and died from his injuries 33 years later. I'm surprised he didn't get a... Hinckley didn't... Can't they retry you? Can't they hold out for the murder charge until somebody dies from the thing you caused? Hinckley was reportedly seeking fame to impress Jodie Foster, with whom he had an obsessive fixation. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity and remained under institutional psychiatric care for over 3 decades. Public outcry over the verdict led to insanity defense. Oh, because he pled insanity. In 2016, a federal judge ruled that Hinckley could be released from psychiatric care as he was no longer considered a threat to himself or others, albeit with many conditions. After 2020, a ruling was issued that Hinckley may showcase his artwork, writings, and music publicly under his own name, rather than anonymously as he had in the past. Oh, so this shit was out. Since then, he has maintained a YouTube channel and his Okay, yeah. Oh, he's a... Oh, this guy's a college grad? He went to Texas Tech? Guys, how many presidents is Texas going to kill or attempt to kill? Quite a few, or at least a couple at this point. Oh, he's a full-on... he's born in Oklahoma. Grew up in University Park. Oh, Highland Park High School. Isn't that where Clayton Kershaw went? And I mean, it's, you could say any high school in the Dallas area, and I would probably say it's this, it's the one that Clayton Kershaw went to and Matt Stafford. But I don't know. I just clicked on the notable alumni athletics. Fred Benners. Come on. Clayton Kershaw. Yep. Hank Keeney. Not Hank Haney. Remember that when we had a Hank Haney and a Hank Keeney? Hank Keeney was that guy that could bomb it and also used to sex Venus Williams, which, hey, different strokes. Oh, he's got a sister, Kelly Keeney, LPGA golf. Oh my God, another one. There's all sorts of Keeneys that went there. They're a legacy. Scotty Scheffler, Masters champion. Bunch of, Matt Stafford, Doak Walker. He of the award. James A. Baker, Justice of the Texas Supreme Court. A lot of people went to Highland High School, including John Hinckley Jr. would be attempted assassin President Ronald Reagan. Okay, Ronald Reagan. Okay. I think you see the point. We discussed John Hinckley Jr., but we didn't play one of his songs. I'm kind of scared to now. I mean, it might be the weed. But now I'm kind of like, also I've been watching Severance. I believe Ed recommended it on the show. It's fantastic, but it's a little, makes you a little scared for the world. Okay, let's check out this. This song is called Dark as the Night. It's the first one I clicked on by former or current would-be presidential assassin, John Hinckley. Oh my God, I'm not signed into Spotify. I didn't know you needed to be. I mean, I have a Spotify. Hold on, I'll play it from my phone. That's signed into Spotify. Please hold. See if I had a producer. A producer could do this for me. But I got to do it myself. It's a one-man show here. John. Is this going to fuck up my algo? I kind of didn't want to sign in. I'm not that. Okay. This is the one we're about to play. Dark as the Night. John Hinckley. Okay, I don't know about that one. I'll be honest. I think it kind of sucks. He is doing a thing. He's doing a, it's like a atmospheric, like psychedelic psych folk thing that he's got going on there. I'm not sure how well he's executing it. Now, that's not his big song, though. So let's get him. And also, he does not have the streams. I mean, for, you know, it's a pretty well-known guy. His top song only has 21,000 streams. Let's play this one. This one's called Never Ending Quest, and then we can move on. Let's make a decision on John Hinckley's music here.
I have got my poetry. I have got my songs. They see me through the lonely nights. Help me to be strong.
Okay, I got to be honest. I let that play a little bit. This is kind of good. I'm not mad at this shit. Also, I don't want, like, John Hinckley's management team to go through my, to run some software on podcasts and find that song and copyright my ass. So I think the jury's out. There may be something there. Look. He's had a lot of time to write some songs. You know, he's been in the joint or the nut house for 30 years. Figure he's come up with some shit by now. There was one more thing we discussed last week. Moving on. And that was old Boris Becker. We were talking about Boris Becker, the English tax people. It's Harry and Will, they want their money. And he's had to declare bankruptcy, even though he chills in Mallorca now. I saw him one time at a, I don't know if I said this on the show last week. I saw him one time at a hotel in Munich, and he was a big dude. He was a big dude, and he was with a not unattractive female. I mean, she was a model. She was at least as tall as him, and she was exotic, which I think is his thing. So good for Boris Becker. He's done some things right. He's fucking had a hell of a serve back in the day. But now they want his money. And we were talking about how he got hit with that paternity back in the day. And I assert that he thought he couldn't impregnate the Russian model because it was a strictly oral connection. And that is not the way babies are made. As far as I know, there's only one way to make the babies, and that's through the front door. So I just remember hearing that, and I'm not sure it's true. So I found some links, and I know we're going to find out together. Game, set, and DNA match against Becker. Hold on, I think there's one before that. That's better. Hold on, I saw one. Becker gives details of broom closet romp. Okay. Tennis star reveals all in new book. Well, you wrote a book. Oh, this is in 2003. I think I saw him around either. Oh, around 04 was the time I saw old Becker. So it was after the book. You didn't make enough off this book. You probably didn't pay taxes on the book. That's why he owes. Okay. He has previously described it as not an affair, just poom, bah, boom. But last night, Boris Becker gave the most graphic account yet of how he became a father for the third time following his celebrated brief encounter. Hold on, I'm not subscribed to this website. You think I would read this? But I want to discover it together. That's the thing. In the first installment of his, brief encounter with a waitress in the broom cupboard of a London restaurant. Whoa, dude. You're hitting it at work? Aggressive. Wow. I thought if she was like a model, I thought they were just like partying. And he was, see, this is a detail I had wrong. In the first installment of his new autobiography, Hold On, comma, Stay a While. Got to work on that title, buddy. That's probably why it didn't sell. How about I'm fucking won Wimbledon three times, you know, like, hold on, stay a while. It doesn't say anything about you. Becker revealed that he had sex with the waitress, Angela Ermakova, only hours after his pregnant then wife, Barbara, had gone into hospital with contractions. Wow, Boris needs it. Could you imagine? Your old lady's like, hey, it's time. If you're a father, you know this moment. I remember the moment my first child, I heard my first child. Well, I didn't know he was going to come, but I had passed out on the couch, whiskey drunk. And the boy's mother came downstairs and shook me awake. And she's like, hey, I don't know. Something's going on. I think I'm having contractions. And I'm like, what? And because the baby wasn't supposed to come for like a month and a half. And I'm like, are you serious? And she's like, yeah. So you know what I didn't do? Call her a cab and then head to the trendy Nobu restaurant in London. I went with her ass. And we were in the hospital for like a day and a half. And then my son was born during a Dodger game where I believe the Dodgers beat Milwaukee 6-2 or something. And Jeff Kent hit a home run. But you know how I remember? Because I was there. I wasn't getting blown in restaurant cupboards. Let's get back to that. Angela Ermakova, Russian sounding. Could be Polish. I'm gonna lean Russian here. Only hours after his pregnant then-wife Barbara had gone into hospital with contractions while Mrs. Becker was being treated, She was giving birth, dude. Look, it's not the 50s when you go. And then back then, did they have bars in hospitals or near hospitals? While Mrs. Becker was being treated, the former Wimbledon tennis champion consoled himself with a couple beers. He then repaired to the bar of the trendy Nobu restaurant in London. It was then that Becker met Miss Ermakova. His wife's in labor. This is bonkers. After 5 minutes of small talk, he followed her into the darkest corner of the restaurant, which turned out to be the broom cupboard, and got down to business. Now, this is solidly 20 years after Boris Becker was a well-known tennis player. And I get that he's big, handsome German guy with money. So it's, you know, I'm sure he could get blown in the corner of trendy Nobu London on his own merits. But I'm just going to guess Miss Ermakova knew he was a tennis player. And he's in London where he did work in Wimbledon. But is he recognizable 20 years after? I get she'd, you know, if Roger Federer wanted a throw, I get tennis is, I mean, he doesn't. Let's be honest. Roger Federer would not be into it. Is the sense I get. Great player. If Novak Djokovic, he'd take her up on it. I'd almost guarantee. Wanted a throw, she'd recognize him because they're current players, or they weren't in 2003. Bad example. Stefan Edberg? I don't know. Anyway, what drove me into the night again, I don't know, Boris writes. Oh, wow. Who wrote this? He needs a refund on that ghostwriter. What drove me out into the night again, I don't know, Boris writes. Afterwards, she went back to her friends, and after another beer, Becker went back to his hotel. The following morning, what a fucking Cyrano over here. Hey, let me go, because it hasn't mentioned the oral yet. He's like, hey, how about we go over here and suck it in the corner, and then you can get back to your friends, because my wife's in labor. The following morning, I drove to Barbara. We packed our 28 tennis bags and suitcases and left England. Whoa, I thought the wife was in labor. What about the baby? Becker, whose autobiography is published next week, claims that he thought nothing more of the encounter until a fax arrived 8 months later at his office in Munich. That's where I saw him. The fax from Miss Ermakova bluntly announced that he was about to become a father. Naturally, I remembered this the evening, but for God's sake, this couldn't be true, he explains in his book, which is being serialized by the man. Okay. The former tennis star revealed that he then hired private detectives to follow the waitress, but called them off and decided to accept paternity. Oh, this is after the fact. He put the Pinkertons on it to see if he could Ray Carruth the situation, realized that wasn't possible, had second thoughts, and he's like, look, I got to give her some of my Wimbledon money and be done with this. But he called them off and decided to accept paternity long before a secret DNA test later confirmed that he was indeed the father of Anna. Mrs. Becker, meanwhile, was, quote, surprised, but, quote, not hysterical. Wow. Are we still using hysterical? This is an old article. After learning of her husband's infidelity, of course, she knew. Certainly my straying hastened the split with Barbara. The tensions had been getting worse for months, he says. The couple split up shortly afterward. Lurid revelations. Let's get to the blowy. Impression that Becker, other children, scant understanding, find him attractive. Asked why women seem to find him attractive, Boris replied, no idea. I'm not especially rich. I'm not especially pretty. I'm no Adonis. And my manhood isn't over enormous? Jeez, Boris. What a detail. Preaching to the choir, buddy. He added philosophically, sex is totally overvalued in our society. Blah, blah, blah. Where's the blowjob? The book is Becker's latest money-making venture. Oh, he was evading taxes back then. Since the broom cupboard and his retirement as a player in 1999, most of his vast fortune has disappeared because he needs it. He's out spending money. 6 weeks ago, he moved to Switzerland to get away from the German taxes. Oh, he was only 35 back then? He's not that old. I will learn to love. Oh, that's right. Because remember, he won his first Wimbledon when he was like 18. This says nothing about the blowjob. Like, is this an oral situation? Or I'm starting to think we may have been sold a bill of goods. Something tells me that Boris, probably his initial excuse was, oh, you can't be pregnant, you only blew me. Now look, she does have a Russian last name, so take that into account. Let's see if this other article says anything about the blowjob, surreal tales, paternity suit. He accepted, conceding that he was the father. No boo, Central London, no words on its trendiness. I take responsibility, blah, blah, blah. I need the word blowjob. I hope the statement, children are important. Armakova met him at the Met Bar. Oh, this is a two-location situation. So he was feeling her a little bit at the Met Bar, and then he's like, let's bounce over to Nobu. I know the bartender. In the weeks after his farewell Wimbledon, he lost blah, blah, Pat Rafter. Oh, yeah. Pat Rafter was the guy that would go with the headband. Later that evening, she and Becker had sex. She says sex. So this is not an oral sex situation. But despite the baby's resemblance to Becker, ooh, Ginge, the 3 times Wimbledon champion denied he was the father. His lawyer suggested that oh, here we go. God damn it. We got to it. His lawyers suggested that Miss Ermakova had inseminated. Now, that's a word. If you're using that word, you're talking about some serious shit. I don't care if it's that Kentucky Derby winner that inseminates 3-4 times a day, 250 grand a pop. That's a serious conversation. You're talking insemination. I don't care. If you're breeding Yorkies, we're talking insemination. We're having a real fucking conversation, and we're doing it right now. His lawyers suggested that Miss Ermakova had inseminated herself with his sperm after oral sex. A deception the German newspaper Bild Zeitung claimed was part of a blackmail plot devised by the Russian mafia. Now let's read that again, because I didn't understand it. Despite the baby's resemblance to Becker, the 3 times Wimbledon champion denied he was the father. His lawyers suggested that Miss Ermakova had inseminated herself with his sperm after oral sex, a deception the German newspaper Bild Zeitung claimed was part of a blackmail plot devised by the Russian mafia. Oh, so his lawyers are like, well, whether or not he was blackmailed, the baby is still the baby. Like, wow. However she was inseminated, it doesn't matter if it was the Russian mafia's idea, he's still responsible. I don't know how they do it. They're pretty wild over there in England, and they're super wild over there in Russia. So who knows? They might have different rules. But last month, Becker agreed to DNA test to ascertain if he was the father, and yesterday accepted the results, corroborated by Miss Ermakova's claim. The legal battle, which began on Monday, came to a swift end yesterday, blah, blah, blah. So it's a little murky. It doesn't seem like Boris is really hanging on to the "she just blew me" story. I feel like things got a little freaky. Boris, who's apparently not too well hung, he wanted to get it in and did so. And she was accepting. And an insemination took place. Look, he's got a bunch of other kids too. He You know, he does his thing. Oh, hold on. There's more. Becker and his wife, Barbara, separated 2 weeks before their seventh wedding anniversary in December last year, immediately before the tennis player was publicly linked with German rapper Sabrine Setler. Last month, they were granted a divorce. Now, hold on. Is this the chick I saw him with? I'll tell you right now because I'll remember. Copy. Paste. Sabrine. German rapper. Yep, that's her. I saw him with this chick. 100%. I saw him with this chick at a hotel bar. You know, she's got an Instagram. At a hotel bar in Munich where he is based. She's getting a little older. She isn't. Yeah, that's her. That's her. I saw him with her out. Anyway, it seems like that was a story he went with to try to curry favor. And maybe that's because he could something he could tell his wife. I imagine that you're running around on a wife like that, Barbara Becker. There's a name. And you want to be able to say, look, honey, you were in labor. I just went down to the trendy Nobu London for a few lagers. So I didn't have to hear you fucking cry in pain. I didn't know something was going to happen, but hey, don't sweat it. It was only a blowjob. Then she comes back with the knocked up and he's Daryl Green. He's Deion Sanders. He's fucking backpedaling. Hip swivel. And he's got to come up with something else. And you know what you do in that situation? Well, what you do is come clean. But what most people do is what Boris does. Throws a fucking another lie on top of it. He's like, it can't be my kid. She only gave me a blowjob. And then he goes, unless the Russian mafia talked her into saving my ejaculate and injecting it into her womb. Or do they harvest an egg? Can they freeze it? Because you'd want to do it. If you had the money, be a good investment. You get some, you're mafia dudes, get some money together, give her an artificial insemination. But of course, that's not what happened. Because Boris was full of fucking shit. He fucked that chick and he didn't want to tell his wife because it's kind of hard to come back from a raw dogging. You let your wife know that you raw dogged. She's thinking about it. She knows, you know, she knows you've been skin to skin in the holiest of holies. A blowjob? Wives and girlfriends? They can get over that. They can get over, hey, I was at trendy Nobu London. She wanted to blow me in the corner. What do you expect me to say? I'm Boris Becker. I need it. You know I need it. But to know that he was getting balls deep, skin to skin, that had to be an issue for Barbara Becker. And I don't blame her. I think Boris is kind of full of shit here. Although, he's welcome to come on the show. I'd love to discuss with him. Maybe he's got a different story. Apparently, he's taken responsibility and he's got a daughter, Anna, who he loves. So it all worked out for the best. Hopefully he can get his, can he go to card shows? Is there card shows for tennis? Somebody's got to like put him on like they did with Vince Young. Isn't Prince or Wilson, don't they need an ambassador? Put Boris on, like put him on, make him your, sponsor him. He probably just blows the money. That's the issue. Okay. That's it. I got a couple more things to talk about. I wanted to talk about how apparently people clean their AirPods or AirBuds, as I mistakenly call them almost every day. Apparently people clean their AirBuds by sucking on them. I just was looking at an article about that and thought maybe we discuss it, but maybe we do that at another time. Maybe we do it when Ed comes back. There was just a couple things. I wanted to catch up on a couple things we discussed last week. If you have not already, go back and listen to episode 417 and enjoy the film that we discussed. Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, with myself, Ed Daly, and of course, our dear friend, Caleb at Bird Respector on Twitter. Check them out and check out the movie. Thanks. I am joined now, as always, by Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, what's up?
I'm excited. Nine-year-old me is really pumped for what we're about to do.
Yeah, same. I actually have a little story about this movie. We are also joined by frequent guest of the show. He comes on. He brings a fresh perspective to our movie reviewing experience. Of course, I'm talking about our dear friend Caleb, aka at Bird Respector. Caleb, what's up, buddy?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me again.
Doing well. Okay, we're gonna talk about Remo Williams. I'm sure if you're of a certain age, you're definitely aware. If you're not of a certain age, you're absolutely unaware. And I would encourage you to download the Tubi app and watch this movie because it is worth your time. But first, we lost a legend this week.
We certainly did.
Rest in peace, the ballers hope you rest in peace. You won't laugh no more.
This guy brought us a lot of laughs.
You won't smile.
And smiles.
A lot of smiles.
Yeah.
You won't laugh no more.
And the laughs again.
Nope.
And you won't fuck no more.
I don't. I'm just,
he wasn't
don't
really
picture doing much of that.
We hope you rest in
peace. R.I.P. Ed, who did we lose tragically today?
The great Gilbert Gottfried, 67 years old. One of the more unique comedians.
I'll say.
Ever.
Really, really one of those guys that was just born to be what he was. Like, he couldn't have existed in any other capacity on this planet.
Right. He couldn't be like a teacher. He couldn't be somebody working behind the counter somewhere. He couldn't do anything else.
Yeah. The dude was a comic. 67. He was 67 for like the last 30 years. He's one of those guys that was just the same age the whole time.
Yeah. Looked pretty good for 67.
Yeah.
But look pretty 67 for 43.
Yeah, exactly. I remember he used to host those like overnight movies with like, oh my God, there was some woman. She was like a knockoff Elvira character with the giant implants.
I think it was still part of the USA Up All Night.
Yes.
Thing.
Yes, the Up All Night thing. Very sad to see him go. He was doing 9/11 jokes on 9/12. I mean, the guy, he was not a pussy. He went for it. He was a comics comic.
He was doing Fukushima jokes, the morning of Fukushima.
Oh, it lost that Aflac sponsorship.
It hurt him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a trash company. Yeah. I mean, but if, you know. He's just trying to make a buck. I don't begrudge him for taking the sponsorship, but way to go to be sponsored by a Japanese company and make tsunami jokes a couple days after a tsunami in Japan. I mean,
yeah,
I don't remember that. What was his joke?
He talked about surfing the waves.
Yeah.
He always just went right for it.
Yeah.
And I think what helped make me like him more was all the comedians you respected the hell. They just loved his set of balls.
He would just
fucking go for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sudden loss. Big loss. R.I.P. Gilbert Gottfried. One of those guys you just thought would be around forever. Okay.
This movie, the first question I would like to know is what knowledge, if any, did you have of it, Caleb?
None. I'd never heard of it. it came out before I was born. Never heard of it. Never know. I asked a couple of my friends about it, even some of my like movie nerd friends, and it was, I don't know what movie this is. I don't know what you're talking about. So brand new Flying Blind. Well, maybe not necessarily blind, because I did some homework for sure. I actually read.
You always do.
I didn't finish it. I had no intention of finishing it, but I read one of the books.
The Destroyer.
Chunk of it. Yeah, The Destroyer. Uh-huh. And boy, howdy, if you think this movie was something, the books are, you know, that you never can really capture a book perfectly in film, but this does a pretty good job.
Well, they would. I mean, this was intended to be a franchise. They were going to take the series of books and try to make, much like the James Bond. This is supposed to be like the working man's James Bond. That
it was called The Adventure Begins.
Yeah.
They like hired a bunch of directors and the guy who wrote Moonraker and all that stuff, all the people that worked on James Bond to make this, you know, blue collar working class James Bond. And
so Guy Hamilton, the director.
Yeah.
He did Goldfinger and Live and Let Die.
Yep.
He did four Bond movies, but like two of the best Bonds he did. So they were clearly going for it. And he had to be pretty old at the time too. Yeah. So
yeah,
he's trying to create something.
This is very much a budget James Bond. I mean, this is, he just had, took, the writer just had some old ideas and threw them in there. Cause there's, I mean, it's basically, it's, they take a cop and teach him parkour. He gets really good at parkour and then he's suddenly like the fucking perfect weapon. This movie, I'll tell you my experience with this movie. This was a pretty, I mean, as a kid, it was pretty badass. My dad lived in another state when I was growing up. And so I would occasionally go there to visit him. And he was one of these dudes, and this was big in the 80s. He had the two VCR set up. So he would rent all the movies from the fucking movie store. And then he'd watch them. He's really into movies. Then he'd watch them. And if he liked the movie, he would tape it onto a blank tape. And so I went out there to visit him when I was 9 years old. And he's like, hey, you got to see this movie. And he's like, so he showed it to me.
Bootlegged.
Yeah, bootlegged. And I'm like, he's like, you love it, right? And I'm like, fuck yeah, I love it. And he's like, look, he's like, I'll rent it again and I'll make another tape of it because I love it too. And he goes, but you take this one home with you. And I fucking took that tape home and I watched it often.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
My experience was my dad was transferred to Miami and I knew nobody. And like, I don't know when this movie premiered exactly, but I think it was kind of early in my tenure in Miami. And so on the weekend, we would go to the movies as a family because there were no sleepovers with buddies. I didn't really know anybody. And we went as a family, like with my two sisters.
Shut up. Yeah.
I mean, I think my one sister was like in preschool.
Yes, this is crazy.
And we all went to Remo Williams and I mean, I was too young to have an erection, but I had whatever a 9-year-old boy had. I was like, I was going crazy. And so rewatching it, I can kind of see where 9-year-old me loved it, but I can also see where I'm guessing Caleb.
Well, you know, I'll say I started a now watching Twitter thread on, and then I stopped because it was, the movie did grow on me and I have complicated thoughts on it. First, I was like, oh my God, what the fuck did you guys make me watch? It's like every like 6 months, I'm like, as soon as I'm picking my life up and things are going well for me, Brian will just message me like, hey, do you want to watch this shitty movie? Throws me off.
We've thrown some bad ones at you.
Well, although I will give you guys credit for rekindling my love of the Fast saga for sure.
Yeah. Everything I know about the Fast saga, you taught me.
Oh yeah,
you're the oracle of the Fast movies for us.
Fast historian.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Brie Larson confirmed for Fast 10, baby. I'm all
fuck
out.
Yeah.
They already went to space. What's next?
What are they going to do next?
Well, they're going to go to space
underwater?
Too.
Atlantis.
There you go. Time travel.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it. They've been underwater, by the way, Ed. Also, we were kind enough to introduce you to Commando, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
this Rima Williams, there was like four movies like this a year in our childhoods. Like this was just like a regular kind of action movie that came out with some fucking badass white guy that fucked a lot of people up, usually Russian types. So it was just one of those movies that, you know, we were super excited about as kids. And, you know, looking back, the whole genre was pretty weak.
I don't know. You know, there was like a lot of thought and production value that went into this. Like, I'm not talking shit. Like, they had, so I was looking into the kind of the production credits and stuff. Like, even the cinematographer had Andrew Laszlo. And if you don't know who that is, like, cause I was kind of like, what caught my eye about it was like, it had this really old school, distinct like cinematography style that you get like from older movies where like the scenes are less dense and every camera shot lasts longer as like a relic from a different era of filmmaking. And that's Andrew Laszlo for sure. You've done a lot of really early stuff. Anyone listening might recognize him from The Warriors. So it's kind of got menacing shots of just facial expressions and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, man, I get it. Like, so you have to, you know, contextually, I think, man, they did a lot of things right, but it was such a fucking train wreck. I feel like if they had just picked like one thing, they tried to do a lot of things. They tried to be like action and funny. And it's like, if you just picked a lane, this would have been, this kicked so much more ass.
Well, there was one choice specifically that was bonkers. And it, but this, I mean, yes, this movie was made by a real studio, by real filmmakers. Absolutely. And it's, and it looks it for the time. It was very cutting edge and it, you know, it doesn't look cheap in comparison to the movies that were made at the time. I agree with that.
I also want to point out right before we get to the decision that they made. Executive producer, Dick Clark was involved and was the reason they were able to get Statue of Liberty status. And I read in some notes that they were never allowed to touch the real Statue of Liberty. So in Mexico City, they rebuilt a bust up Statue of Liberty, but they were allowed to be on the scaffolding of the real thing for several shots.
It was actually under construction and they did.
It was a big deal because I'm from New Jersey and for like 2 years they were getting it ready for the 100 year in 1986. So it was under scaffolding for a couple years and it was a big deal when it was being made over for the 1986 centennial celebration of it.
Yeah, it was closed. I remember that too. It was a whole thing. How long it was closed and, you know, tourists couldn't go in it. And it was a big deal, the unveiling. And Dick Clark, the dude had juice. Like he had his hands in everything, you know, the guy could get things done.
And I guess because I read also that an actor didn't accept the part at first because he didn't want to be insensitive.
Yeah. Well,
but maybe Dick Clark used his power to convince him otherwise.
Yeah. I read that he didn't want to do it because he had no martial arts training and which we clearly saw that wasn't an issue for anybody.
There was no martial art. Like 90 minutes into it, there was like one thing where it was like holding a log or something. That was like the only martial arts in the whole goddamn movie.
He actually looked like he was doing more martial arts in the very beginning before he had actually been taught martial arts when he's fucking up the goons on the pier.
Oh yeah, he fucks them up. He
can brawl.
Yeah, he gets in like a karate stance a couple times and like I'm like, "Oh yeah, this guy's had some training." And that's then the rest is just fucking elbows and fucking punches to the big and looping punches to the head.
A lot of swiveled hips, a lot of twisting.
I just love that, like, the government's entire plan for this program is to take a 43-year-old cop with no training and then start training him in martial arts. Like, yep, that's the plan. That actually gives me hope as I age. I'm like, okay, I could still do it.
Oh, yeah, but, totally.
I could be the Tom Brady of the CIA.
Yeah.
So, and to jump into the scene where they introduce him to, like, hey, this is we're the entire unit and we only report to the president. I had a laugh thinking about Ronald Reagan being on top of this secret unit. Like, well, I remember him saying a lot of, I do not recall, like he was on top of this like little secretive group.
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, if you're still hanging in there at that point, the entire premise of the movie falls apart right then, because then he's like, oh, it's just you two guys? Like, see you later.
Right. Yeah, I'm leaving. I'm walking out now.
Yeah. So let me just, for people that might not be familiar, Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, also released as, and you're going to be shocked, they had an even stupider title in mind, Remo Unarmed and Dangerous, is a 1985 American action adventure film, like we said, directed by Guy Hamilton of the James Bond franchise.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. The film featured Fred Ward. Fred Ward was like, he was never a star, but he's like, he's in Escape from Alcatraz. Like, he's a real movie actor.
Had Escape from Alcatraz really come out yet?
Yeah, he's good. I had it come out yet. I don't know. I assume
Tremors hadn't yet. So that's the thing, is I was right before we hopped on, I was running late from work, but I was going to try and read a little bit about this, because it's like, okay, you know, Fred Ward had some roles and he's got some chops, you know. I actually like Fred Ward for my part, but he didn't land in this movie necessarily. But it's like, why did they choose him? Because the other guy that was going for this part was Bruce Willis.
And that's like, what I read. Yeah.
We want like a more known quantity, but what else had he been in by this point?
Yeah. Cause
Tremors hadn't come out yet.
Escape from Alcatraz came out in 79.
Okay. So that must,
but he it. Was, but he was known, but he was very he's character. Around. I mean, he was more well known than Bruce Willis at this point. Probably. Oh,
for sure. Yeah.
But like not, he was, I don't think anyone had asked him to lead a movie.
He apparently got his start in Italian TV. Maybe that's where Clint Eastwood found him for Escape from Alcatraz. And then, breaking news, had a background as a boxer, which is where he got that nose.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. He played Gus Grissom in The Right Stuff.
That's right.
And he also had a decent role in Silkwood. Like, he was in real movies.
Oh yeah. No, he's a real actor. He's still around.
I saw him not too long ago in something.
Yeah. The character's based on
True Detective.
Others in the movie include,
of course, Joel Grey. We'll get to him.
Yeah. Wilford Brimley and Kate Mulgrew, who was another. I mean, Wilford Brimley, obviously.
Wilford Brimley,
this guy.
Yeah. He was either 50 or 51 when they filmed this.
That's but just
my favorite thing about his character is he never got out of that chair.
No, it's yeah,
he never stands. Like, they very clearly had him like paid for like 2 days right. of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm just going to sit here and you're going to film it and you're going to fucking like whatever I give you. And that's that.
I liked his setup too, where he's like every guy that you've ever worked with in IT that doesn't want to get out of his fucking office. Like, he's got a messy office. There's like a reel to reel behind him. There's a bunch of fake shit that you don't know how it works and it probably doesn't work. And he's got this little computer and he's like, everything's in here, buddy. And it's like, okay, man. He's there. Kate Mulgrew is the
love interest.
The sort of, I mean, she gets hot for it on the battlefield for some reason. I don't know that she's
paralyzed at some point.
It was like so fucking weird because she doesn't like, they don't even meet till like over an hour in the movie. Don't they? It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, other than their encounter. Yeah. I mean, basically
she's the hero from the inside. Uh-huh. Like, she was the one on the inside, like you are kind of pulling for, that you know eventually they're going to meet up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. She's
smoking in this movie, by the way.
Yeah,
oh my God.
She was in a lot of stuff, too. She worked a lot back in the 80s. The character is based on, as Caleb mentioned, the Destroyer pulp paperback series featuring this character, Remo Williams, which in the movie we learn comes from the name comes from a bedpan, which is kind of a funny detail. It fared poorly in theaters and received mixed reviews from critics. Although it did shockingly earn Joel Grey a Golden Globe nomination.
The not film, only, okay. It yeah. also got the person who did his makeup an Oscar nomination.
Yes. Yeah.
And
it was, bonkers. You know, I hadn't seen the movie in 35 years and I mean, it's so much more jarring than I remember. Just
he looks like a burn victim, dude.
Yes,
he does. He does.
You look like a fucking Klingon or something.
The makeup, the hair, the voice, like the whole thing. I'm just like, so how did they do this? Yes. it fared poorly. It's Golden Globe. The film and a Remo Williams television pilot both credited Dick Clark as executive producer. And I did also realize that the Chun character would have been played by Roddy McDowall in the TV series. So they were never going to go on.
Lesson
series.
Not learned. Just
hire a fucking Asian guy. Come on, dude.
Read that there's talk of recreating the destroyer today, which I think they could still make something out of it. Just not make this.
Yeah, they could do anything. The film was supposed to be the first of a series. A significant set piece within the film takes place, like we discussed, at the Statue of Liberty. The plot. Sam Macon. I had recalled that he had amnesia, but he didn't have amnesia, which makes this movie even more fucking mental. Like, just write it in there that his mind has been erased. Because if he still knows who he actually was,
he would want to check.
Yes, he would want to escape this situation. And he
just give him a head injury in that fight. And then totally,
absolutely. Like why even try to drown him? They, at no point in the movie does he go, hey, call me Sam. Bullshit.
Why do I have to be
Remo? He accepts it.
Yeah, Remo, he accepts a lot.
I love how the government's just like, yeah, dude, without your consent, we killed you on paper and you're just going to have to do this. And these are your orders. And he's just like, yeah, all right, fine.
Yeah, exactly.
He said something like, what if I refuse? And they're like, well, we already have a coffin for you. So they said they're going to kill him, but there's just those two older guys with him.
Yeah. They already gave it up that there's only three of them. So why don't they just pretend? He's like, Wilford Brimley could be like, there's so many of us, you'll never know. You know, just like give him the illusion that it's not one fat ass and an old black guy that he's got to kill in the room.
One guy that we're not even sure has working legs, so he can definitely outrun him.
Yeah.
He's got that cool computer that somehow is able to produce pristine, crystal clear security footage in 1985, which is...
Yeah, you can't even get that today. Like every time there's a fucking jewelry store robbery, I'm like, this is the best fucking camera you have?
Right.
7-Eleven can't get better
when that guy got domed with the twisted tea pounding.
Yes.
Yeah. It's still pretty grainy.
Yeah, pretty grainy. Sam Macon is a tough Brooklyn, New York City street cop and Vietnam era Marine Corps veteran. He is unwillingly recruited as an assassin. He's very willing to kill people right away for a secret United States organization, CURE. The recruitment is through a bizarre method. His death is faked and he is given a new face and a new name.
Can I just say something really funny about the whole face thing?
Yes.
It's like, okay, so ostensibly he's been unconscious for who knows, days and then whatever, weeks. And like, they do the surgery and then he wakes up as they're shaving his mustache. Like, that's the last thing that you did was shave his sweet mustache.
Yeah.
Come on.
And the before they changed his appearance when he's still a cop, his mustache is like not even glued on properly. It's kind of hanging off.
And during the fight scene, it looks like it's peeling on one side.
It was like when he's trying to sip his coffee, I like that he busts the guys up in the thing and then he goes back to his car so he can finish his coffee. But he also had to give him a different appearance. They did the thing that they do in every samurai movie where they glue fake sideburns onto the guy. And I was like, it was just like, that's all they did to change his appearance because
they didn't do anything to him, did they?
No, they didn't. So he gets up and he goes, oh, I see you rearranged my face. And I'm like, how can you tell? They just gave you a shave.
I think he had some sort of prosthetic nose thing in the first scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just one of those like dollar store disguises, but they just took the glasses off. He just has like a weird fucked up nose and a shitty mustache.
It's the Groucho Marx disguise without the glasses.
not like they changed his appearance enough that he couldn't walk back into his precinct and go, hey, chief, I'm not
guys,
dead.
They fucked me up. Yeah. They knocked me into the river.
Yes.
So did they pay those randos to attack him, or was were they following him as he's breaking up some sort of street gang?
It was an interesting plan.
If I may, it doesn't get into this in the movies, but in the books, there are more than three of them. So they are, it's an organization created by Kennedy.
And it has, to combat secret societies?
Which brings up a great Gilbert Gottfried joke. He says, Jackie, where were you when Kennedy got shot?
Oh, come on, man. Oh, man. Jesus. Yeah.
So it was an interesting plan they had. They, first of all, like, what's he doing there? They're like, oh, he goes and he just hangs out by the docks in the dark to have his coffee breaks. Like, how do they know they were going to find him there? That was his beat. Yeah. That's, yeah. I guess he just like,
damn it, I pulled the scary warehouse again.
Yeah.
And they didn't just attack him. They hit him with a 2x4 with nails sticking out of it.
They fucked him up. Yeah.
See, and there was no pedigree. Blood.
Yeah. Yeah. No blood. Yeah. And then they ram him with an armored car and it goes into the bay, the river. They rechristen him Remo Williams after the name and location of the bedpan in Macon's hospital room. His face is surgically altered and he is trained to be a human killing machine by his aged, derisive.
Love it. They gave him a fucking bedpan. What's up, Lieutenant Toilet?
An impassive Korean martial arts master, Chun.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Though Remo's training is extremely rushed by Chun's standards. This is, again, interesting. Remo learned seemingly impossible skills such as dodging bullets and running on water and wet cement. We'll talk about the cement. Chun teaches Remo the Korean martial art named Sinanju. Remo's instruction is interrupted when he is sent by Cure to investigate a corrupt weapons procurement program.
He was put on Earth to execute the 11th commandment. Remember? Thou shalt not get away with it.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Let's play the trailer. Oh, wait, is this it? Hold on. I think I lost the trailer. I've clicked the wrong link. Here we go. Let's listen to the trailer.
America's top security experts have chosen this man.
Don't take any chances. This guy's a killer.
For a special mission. But first, he's got to pass one little test.
Speak English. Does your nightingale sing? Hold it!
Dodging bullets.
The English thing was in the fucking trailer? Holy shit.
Yeah. No, it's... I was surprised. We'll get more into this. We'll jump right into this.
You move like a baboon with two corrupt feet. Ow. However... I think I can do something with him.
Goodbye, Mr. Grove.
Who's he?
No more boys.
This bad guy, Charles Grove, he was in lots of stuff. He got the Tony Bennett hairpiece where it's just like, so they just hadn't perfected the technology back then. So it's like, you can't stop staring at it the whole time.
Grove. Yes, we make that.
There is none. Doesn't exist.
These men will rob America of her might.
He won't be with us for much longer.
Unless someone...
Relax.
...can stop them.
Fuck yeah.
Concentrate! This is no time for prayer!
All right, you guys get the point. He basically... Once they pull him out of the hospital, they pair him up with this dude, Chun, and you heard a little bit of it there.
Chun trailer, dude.
He's Korean. No, they weren't embarrassed of it back then. Chun is Korean and he's played by a very white actor.
By Jeannie Bueller's dad.
Yeah, Broadway actor, cabaret star, Joel Grey. And let's do that. Check out the whole scene here. Let me see if I can get this going. Oh, here we go. This is where Remo. So they take him out of the hospital and they're like, okay, it's time to start doing assassinations. And he's like, okay, if you say so. And they're like, Okay, so here's a key and a gun. Go in that apartment and kill the bad guy. And he's like, whatever you say, boss, and goes right in there. Like, not like I'm just going to walk through the front door. Is that how assassinations normally happen? So he comes in to this basement apartment, and there's a small Asian man that looks like a wax
figure. There's a small burn victim.
You actually kind of have to be told he's Asian. Like, if it weren't for the voice, like if it was just a picture the very of him
accent, yeah.
Yeah, you think well, what happened to that old guy?
He quickly says, like, he's doing like Koreans the Michael Scott. Are the best people on earth or something. He lets you know he's Korean.
He's cosplaying. So let's meet Chun. So here's Remo. He walks through and he sees this tiny Asian man. He goes, oh, he's no threat. He's like, he's looking for the other bad guy. But he realizes the door's locked, and he comes back to the tiny Asian
man. How do you open this?
Yeah, he just assumes he's like the service worker or something.
More racism.
Speak English.
God.
Does your nightingale sing?
Yeah, well, how do you get out of here?
The same way you came in.
No good. There's a guy outside wants me to knock off your boss.
I am here alone.
Now, do they teach him to explain his assassinations to randos?
I'm here doing government assassination. Can you help me out?
And they just
didn't give him a fucking picture of who he's supposed to shoot or anything. And he's like, yeah, fuck it, let's go.
And no masks. And
just to establish that the guy is Korean, he's just sitting at a table doing characters. He's like doing calligraphy of Korean letters on a piece of paper,
he's
I think.
Doing calligraphy. He's sitting crisscross applesauce doing calligraphy.
Alone. There is no one upstairs.
That's a white guy.
Then he starts doing some slow motion Steven Seagal martial arts.
Yeah.
They got the bamboo flutes playing and everything.
God yeah, damn. They do it all. This is, you know, 15, 20 years after the Gilligan's Island submarine captain. Like, this is, I realize it was still the 80s, but how much cocaine were movie producers doing that they thought it was a better idea to put a white guy in fucking weird makeup and have him doing a crazy fucking racist accent than just finding some Asian guy to do the part?
Michael Scott Ping impression. Remember that?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, now look. Let's not make any trouble for each other. All I want to do is to get out of here.
It is too late for that.
Hold it! I don't want to kill you, but I will if I have to.
This is so badass. The bullet dodging. And he keeps his hands in his coat. Of course, he's dressed in like a traditional Asian.
Yeah. No, don't say Korean because we can't verify that. None of you know that's traditional Korean.
No, it's definitely not. It's some type of, I'm guessing like a servant's, you know, he looks like the butler, but I'm not sure.
He looks like the guy who like sweeps up puke in an opium den.
Yes. That's right. Actually, yes. Good description. He steals the gun away. He pops out the bullets from the magazine. I mean, it's just, he doesn't really, I mean, his martial art is very unconvincing. It's basically like he paralyzes. Yeah. He like grabs pressure points, but he's an old ass man. Like, it's kind of hard to, I don't think he was that old as a guy. Like they didn't even hire an old guy. They hired a middle-aged guy to play an old guy to play an Asian old guy and do the voice. And the
I don't know if you guys know this, but Korea actually has a very famous martial art called Taekwondo. Why didn't they just do that?
Yeah, I know.
They made one up. Yesterday was Joel Gray's 90th birthday.
90th. Holy
shit.
This was, 37 years ago, roughly?
Yeah. He was the same age. He was the same age as Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like 50. He was 50 something.
Wilford looked a lot older than that, man.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just still hard to process. Like, after having rewatched it, and it just like, how was this normal? And then they were going to do a TV show also with a white guy playing Asian. It's just like, I don't understand. I can't remember this being normal. But it was.
Everybody always complains about how, you can't make a movie like that today. And it's like, well, you ever watch this and then thought about whether we should? Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. No, you definitely should not. Yeah.
And also keep in mind, didn't Emma Stone play a Hawaiian woman?
Oh, that's true. Like, yes.
Like 10 years ago.
But do they? Yes, that's true. Yeah. She's very white. Not Hawaiian at all. I know they sometimes take, like, Scarlett Johansson was in something where they just take the source material where it's an Asian person and they just make them like the
change it.
Yeah. Like the, what's that movie about the blackjack, the people that gained the blackjack 21.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
I read the book, and in the book, it's
everyone was Asian.
They're Asians from MIT, but then they make the movie and they're like, oh, nobody's going to go see a movie with a bunch of Asians.
Oh, I got Kevin Spacey, his FaceTime.
Right, exactly. So it was an odd choice. So what's in it for Remo? Like, he's...
There's no financial conversation whatsoever.
They don't really make it clear how they're helping the situation. Like, they're like, hey, some people need to be assassinated. And it's like... I need a little more proof.
Just mangling hot dogs left and right.
Yes.
And just like, yeah, dude, you're telling me I get unlimited hot dogs and I get to shoot people and probably a couple dogs, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're like, okay, so if you don't start doing killings for us, we're going to kill you. And he goes, okay, I guess. And then he moves in and they're like, you got to become roommates with Chun. And he's like,
you got to live with this dude.
Yeah. So he goes and lives with him in his loft. And he immediately starts giving him parkour lessons. He's like, here's what you do. You got to run on ledges like those Russians do on YouTube. Like, just run around on the ledge. And that's like the training. And then he goes, you need this special piece of wood to make your fingers strong. So why couldn't he just use the wall or just like a chair? Like, it had special like finger like striking spots on it, but it was just a piece of wood. Like, it wasn't that special, but he shows him.
Yeah. I had seen that from watching the Saturday morning Kung Fu movies. That training thing is a thing. And they all
it is.
And, yes. And Tarantino also used it in Kill Bill.
Oh, the whole, right.
The finger point board. Like, that is something. It's definitely like a martial art trope.
Yeah, it's probably mostly for movies. What else? There's he takes him to the Ferris wheel.
The Wonder Wheel. Coney Island, yeah.
That's so, my favorite thing about this movie is just like 30% scenes of him hanging off of objects.
Yeah, it's a lot of hanging, it's a lot of jumping off poles, standing on ledges. He's able to learn how to dive into big piles of sand and pop out of them, which is important, I guess.
It's a good skill to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just in case you
put that on your resume. What I would say is watching this movie was, you could tell they wanted to make a James Bond type franchise. And it made me think of when they rebooted it with Casino Royale, they gave you like 5 minutes of him establishing that he's a new 00 agent. And then he was not as refined on the job, but he was already doing things. In this, there's like 25 minutes of training inside a loft with the guy.
Yeah.
And it's like back then in movies, and if you watch some like great old movies, 3 Days of the Condor or something like that, or French Connection, there'll be an inordinate amount of time of like shoes hitting pavement. You see people walking and you see and it wasn't like, oh, we need to let this movie breathe. They just wasted time a lot.
Yeah.
Like, just get right to it. Let's go.
They had artists, you know, they were making art, these films.
You could have done the Wonder Wheel. You could have done all those things in one montage and then show that he's starting to assassinate a few other guys before the main kill. And you could show that he's not quite as refined, but he's getting better on the job like they did in Casino Royale. Instead, there's like 25 minutes of just hanging out doing parkour around the apartment.
Yeah, at least do the Rocky thing and put some fucking John Cafferty behind it, please.
Yeah. Or say it's been 2 years. Say, hey, it's me, Colonel Mack. I'm back. How's the training going? It's like you don't get because Remo gets like a Stockholm syndrome too because Chun is a fucking asshole to him the whole time. He doesn't feed him.
He's mean.
He makes fun of him the whole time. He watches soap operas. He won't let him get any pussy.
He throws out his food.
Yeah, he throws out his food.
On the subject of pussy, I got to just jump in really quick. This is true. There's a section in the book where Chun actually makes it so Remo can't come.
Hey, fam. There's still a lot more of this episode to hear, but it's only available to our bonus content subscribers. Click the link in the show notes or go to theballerlifestyle.com and subscribe so you never miss a minute of the show.
Sports and culture and whatever. Me talking loud comments, conundrums, my brothers. Reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man. No one is above us. 5-star. Even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot. Man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man. It really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers, TBLS, the lifestyle's baller, and you know the show is so flawless, TBLS.